This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, I think we're officially in the dog days of the summer here for the NFL schedule. Absolutely nothing going on except Chris Sims making himself the story. That's about it. But we're not going to do Chris Sims on this podcast. I think that has kind of run its course. The Patriots, or the league actually, did announce last week that all of the training camp dates. So now we know officially that the Patriots, all players will report on July 24th with the first practice that is open to the public on July 25th. So we're about a month away from football. So it's on the horizon. Yeah. We're almost there.
Yeah. We're getting there. And, if there's no football, we can, busy ourselves with dumb quarterback lists and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, that's the problem, is that this time of year, right, for these NFL people to stay relevant. It's all schedule predictions, like what's
oh, God,
is this team going to go 12-4 or 5-11 or whatever, or quarterback rankings lists. That's like all that there is.
There really is no worse time in the sports calendar when there's just baseball.
I know. Luckily, NBA free agency might bring some spice to some things next week.
Maybe
we can do a Kemba Walker podcast if we want to, and see what happens with that. But today we are going to continue our preview series of the Patriots roster, and we're going to try our best to preview this wide receiver position. And I say try our best because this is a lengthy one. I mean, this is a meaty conversation. There are, I think, anywhere between 7 to 9 receivers that have a legitimate chance to make the roster for only about 5 spots, if we're estimating. So this really could break any direction, I would say, just depending on the way that training camp and the preseason really goes, and also the health and status, obviously, of Demaryius Thomas health-wise and Josh Gordon status-wise with his suspension. But the way that I broke it out here, just to kick us off, is into a couple of categories. I got 2 locks right now on the roster. Obviously, Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry. Those guys are not going anywhere.
Right.
Then I have Philip Dorsett in his own tier, in this above the next group of guys, but below the locks. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more in a little bit here. But he's a tough guy to peg right now because he's certainly showed enough last season, I think, enough flash to warrant a roster spot and keeping him in the system. But he could get leapfrogged. I don't think that that's necessarily that crazy, but I think that he's pretty safe. The next group here, I called the next 3, and I think that they're kind of fighting for 1, maybe 2 roster spots among them, and that is Braxton Berrios, Maurice Harris, and Dontrell Inman. I think all 3 of those guys have a very good case of being on an NFL roster. It's just a matter of a numbers game. And like I said at the beginning, what happens with Gordon and Demaryius Thomas could knock one of those guys off. And then there's the long shots. Damon Patterson, who spent most of the year last year on the practice squad, and the undrafteds and Jacoby Myers and Ryan Davis. That's a lot of names.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is necessarily one of the best receiving corps in the league, but they have a lot of NFL bodies at this position right now.
Yeah. And it's just a lot of question marks, if you ask me.
A lot to figure out.
They're really going to need every day of this preseason, every day of these exhibition games. And so I kind of feel like it's potentially a good group. I also feel like it's one of those groups that's not going to, we're not going to really have a good handle on it, maybe even towards the end of the regular season, because there's so many good players there who might not separate until and find their roles perhaps until later in the season. I mean, I just look at somebody like Harry. He's going to make the team, obviously, but what exactly is his role going to look like? How much of the playbook is he going to be able to master? what patterns and what routes is he going to be most comfortable in right away, as opposed to week 16. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where we're not going to know how good this positional unit is until sort of later in the season.
Yeah. And I think the biggest fear for Patriots fans and for me right now is, well, this time last year, they had a lot of bodies at the position too. And as the war of attrition kind of takes its toll, and as guys kind of, you know, separate themselves, last year they were in a position in the first 4 weeks of the season without Edelman where they were really struggling at that position. Mm-hmm. And they were really kind of, you know, in flux and really desperate to make that move for Josh Gordon, I would say.
Yeah.
And it was really, it could be one of those situations where this is similar. They don't necessarily, outside of Edelman and the potential of N'Keal Harry, they don't really have a ton of solidified guys that are foundational pieces at the receiver position right now. You know, guys that we know what to expect from and we can pencil them right in or even Sharpie them right in as contributors on this team. So for that reason, I think that there's a lot of question marks, but I also think there's a ton of potential for this group to be a lot better than the group was last year. Yeah. And the group last year was obviously good enough to win the Super Bowl. So all of that is good news. But you kind of touched on our first point there. I don't think we could talk all podcasts about Julian Edelman. I think we all know what Julian Edelman's bringing to the table at the top of the depth chart. So let's talk about spots 2 through 5, if you will. And the first thing that you mentioned there is just kind of the expectations for N'Keal Harry. Let's start there, and then we can talk a little bit more about his usage as well. But, I mean, what are you expecting out of him? Because I think that this is the first time in a long time. I mean, Chad Jackson's really the only other guy that they've drafted this high at that position. And I think there's a lot of kind of, I wouldn't call it pressure because I don't think he's feeling it, but outside pressure to fill Rob Gronkowski's shoes and be that second guy to Edelman.
Yeah, and I kind of think that there are a few things right away that you can sort of do with him. I mean, I think in the red zone, he's, you know, with his size and his hands and his ability to make contested catches, I think right away you really want to test that out. You want to give him opportunities to make plays down near the goal line. You want to give him chances to make contested catches for first downs on third down. I think you want to get him as much usage as possible as early as possible because you know you're going to need him down the line. Obviously, you spent a first-round draft pick on him. You're not expecting him to be sort of a complimentary piece. You want him to be sort of one of the focal points right away. So, I think those near the goal line passes are something you want to see right away, especially with Gronkowski out of the picture now. So, I think those are, you know, some of the places you want to see him right away, and, you know, figure out what he likes best, figure out what he's most comfortable with right away. And then go to that. And you don't necessarily have to have him run the entire route tree right away. Just get him comfortable and get him comfortable in the offense, and he'll progress throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, I really like that idea of, you know, what are the, let's call it, just to simplify things, 5 or 6 routes that he feels really comfortable running and Brady feels really comfortable throwing to him. Right. So if it's a kind of a route tree that we've seen in the past from guys of his skill set, like a Dez Bryant, for example, it's really, you know, slants, hitches, fade routes, maybe wide receiver screens, that type of stuff, digs. I think that that's where you kind of start with it. Right. And you just and then you expand from there. And, you know, in terms of numbers and statistics, we can get into all that. I don't think that he's touching Terry Glenn's rookie records.
No. So
Terry Glenn had 90 catches for 1,132 yards in 1996 in his rookie year. I don't think that N'Keal Harry is touching that. That's not happening. But in terms of the Belichick era stats, the career high or the rookie record, if you will, for a Belichick era player in receiving yards is Aaron Hernandez's 563 in 2010. I think that he's got a chance to break that.
Yeah.
I think he's got a really good chance to be probably, as a rookie, the best receiver that we have seen besides maybe Gronk and Hernandez, like those two guys. And then obviously Aaron Dobson kind of is a little bit below that. Now, Gronk obviously had double-digit touchdowns his rookie year. He just didn't have the receiving yards. He was still the red zone. He was a red zone threat right away. And I think that maybe that's also where, like what you said, where Nikhil can kind of find a role as being that red zone threat instantly, even if he's not necessarily putting up a 1,000-yard season as a rookie.
Right.
So I think that, you know, that's where you start with them. You keep it simple. And this is, I think the good news is, too, is that they kind of have a blueprint of how to do this from Josh Gordon last year. It's a similar type of receiver. And although Gordon has a little bit more NFL experience, obviously, it's similar in the fact that we're going to find like the five or six things that we know he can do really well. And we're going to focus on those things. And then maybe, you know, quickly slowly add some of the more nuanced stuff, you know? And I think that that's kind of where it goes from there. But I think the cool thing that I'm looking forward to the most is, where is he going to line up? And how is Josh McDaniels going to work him off of Julian Edelman? Because I think that one of the reasons why they drafted him for sure is his kind of his versatility and his ability to line up anywhere in the formation, both outside and in the slot. So I think that you're going to see a lot of kind of motioning and moving him around and finding matchups and working crossing routes and different stuff over the middle where they're combining and working off of each other with Harry and Edelman. I think that what Josh McDaniels does with him, I think, is going to be really cool because his skill set is unique. I mean, we talked all about it, you know, during the draft and everything, but his ability to create after the catch and his foot speed and stuff like that for a guy his size is something that doesn't come around too often.
Yeah, and I like the idea of just getting the ball in his hands quickly and seeing what he can do with it.
Yeah.
That's what he did a lot at Arizona State. You know, wide receiver screens, hitches, stuff like that. Just get him the ball and see what he can do with it. And I think, you know, McDaniels is smart enough to know not to, you know, really get too fancy with a guy his talent right away.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true too. It's going to be fascinating, I think, because the other thing that you said was that how maybe early on there might be a little bit of force feeding. And I think that was definitely the case a little bit with Sony Michel early on last year, just trying to get him into the offense and integrated into the system and understanding what he's looking at, all those kinds of things. And then it pays dividends. You know, everybody, it's frustrating. I get it. It's frustrating in September when Sony Michel is running into a brick wall, you know, four or five times a game, and he's not getting the production that you want to see. But then you get the running game that you got in the second half of the season as a result of that, you know, all those early season carries. So you could see some of that. And I can see myself writing the, you know, N'Keal Harry is only catching 40% of his targets column, you know, in two games into the season. But by the end of the season, you know, you hope that number is a little bit higher. And I think that you're expecting him to be a foundational piece when you draft him in the first round.
Exactly.
And you know, you're expecting him to be a go-to target for Tom Brady, and you're going to have to work out the kinks to get him there. They did the same thing with Josh Gordon. They did it with Sony Michel. It's going to be kind of along those same lines, I would think, you know, unless he takes us all by surprise and he just hits the ground running. But let's move on to Philip Dorsett, because I think that he's kind of the first, you know, domino to fall, if you will, in terms of kind of working out these non-locks and in the back end of this depth chart here. I mean, I think the biggest question is did he do enough last year to be a roster lock? I don't think he's a lock, but I think there's like an 85% chance he makes the roster. And the other 15% is maybe if they can get something out of him for a trade.
Right. I like him to make the team. I just think, you know, it's not so much a question of whether or not he did enough last year. I think he probably did, but it's just one of those things where, do you really want to not have him on the team when there's so many other question marks?
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, is he like a, you know, a total dangerous threat against, you know, all these other teams all the time? I don't think he's, you know, some outstanding player, but I think, you know, he's good enough where Brady has enough confidence in him that when he throws it to him, he'll make the play. And, you know, I think you want as many sort of reliable, familiar targets on the field this year, especially at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, he really, when you look at his numbers from last year, I mean, he had the highest catch rate on the team. you know, every single time Brady threw him the ball, he caught it. And he was getting open in those situations, at least. Then in the playoffs and even late in the regular season, they really found a groove with him in that, like, fringe red zone area, that, like, 20 to 30-yard area, where he could really use his speed and acceleration to get open. And so that the, you know, one of the hardest things to do, I think, as an offense is that range when you're in that 15 to 30 yard range in the opponent's territory, because you're kind of too far out to run it in, but you also need to get, you know, you don't really don't have that much space for that many first downs either in that spot. So you really, the easiest way to do it is probably to get a shot play to either get you down to the one or the two, so you could put your goal line unit in and run the ball in, or just get a touchdown from 25 yards out would be nice too. And they were able to kind of do that with Dorsett last year at times, a lot of those stack alignments, especially, you know, he had a touchdown grab in, against the Chargers in the playoffs and on one of those plays, and a couple of other ones late. I think he had one against the Jets too in week 17. Those types of plays are really, really valuable, because that's a tough kind of part of the field to be in as an offense. And you're kind of not here nor there in terms of what your play calls are. So if a lot of teams across the league, a lot of smart offensive coordinators are designing plays to just score from those areas. So you don't even have to worry about being inside the 10 or inside the 5, and what do you do then? So I think that, you know, that part of it, he really developed a kind of a good chemistry of working off of his teammates and really getting open in that area of the field, which I think is valuable in today's NFL especially. So I think Philip Dorsett did a lot of really nice things last year. I know a lot of people wanted to see him play more and were surprised, especially that he couldn't get reps over Chris Hogan by the end of the season.
Right.
So maybe this is Philip Dorsett's, you know, I don't think he's going to break out and have 1,000 yards, but maybe this is his opportunity to show that he can be a third receiver. You know, I think that that's kind of where you would like to see him be, his ceiling with the Patriots, you know, have him be the third guy that comes on the field and, you know, their basic 11 personnel with Edelman and N'Keal Harry. I think that would be like a really good kind of development for his career, if you will, for Philip Dorsett, because nowadays in the league, being a top three receiver on the depth chart that's a money situation. You know, you get paid to be that guy in the league now. So I think that's kind of where Philip Dorsett would like to be. All right. Now let's move on to the fourth and the fifth spot, which I think is really, this is tough. I mean, there's a lot of names here, and obviously what happens with Josh Gordon and Demaryius Thomas is really going to have a huge impact on this. But the kind of next three crowd that I separated, we can talk about the UDFAs and Damon Patterson. I really don't think those guys are making the roster. No. I think Jacoby Myers has a chance, like a 5% chance, but I don't see it happening. But the kind of the minicamp darlings of Braxton Berrios and Maurice Harris, now ever since that minicamp performance for those guys over those 3 days, every single roster projection you see come out has those two guys on the team now.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think it's a little early to be touting those guys a little bit too much because of minicamp.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not indicative of real football, but I guess, you know, it's going to come down to, you know, these exhibition games and stuff like that.
I agree.
I'd really like to see Berrios be, you know, somebody who separates himself as like an Edelman heir apparent kind of.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you know, I mean, you know, he was with the team last year. So who knows how comfortable he is. Either one of those guys I'd like to see sort of emerge, but I just don't see it necessarily playing out like one of these guys really separating in the preseason, but we could see it. I just would like to see Berrios, because I mean, he was a guy that everybody identified last year before the draft as sort of like a Patriots, you know, Patriots type player. He's really shifty. I don't know how well he separates against NFL corners, but You know, he was a reliable guy at Miami, you know, a big third down clutch sort of player. So you could see him sort of being, you know, if not the next Edelman, maybe the next Amendola, you know, a guy that comes in certain situations and, you know, makes a play here or there. So you just want somebody to emerge. I'd kind of like to see Berrios be that guy, but I don't know. I think it's really up in the air. I don't think anybody really has put, you know, that foot forward where you say, okay, that's going to be the guy.
Yeah, Berrios, you know, at minicamp, the thing was is that there, even though there's no real contact at minicamp, you can still, the corners get still get in your face and get a little bit grabby, you know. And yeah, they play their typical brand of coverage for the most part. So these are passing camps, you know, that's what these are for. These are for the passing game for the most part, the back seven and the obviously the offensive side of the ball. Berrios did get open. I mean, he was consistently getting open more than he was last year. I think that he's improved his ability to separate at the top of the route, which is good news for him. But I think the biggest thing is what you said about him being kind of like Danny Amendola. I think that's kind of where his ceiling is and always has been. He was one of the most predictable Patriots draft picks of the last decade.
Yeah.
Like maybe besides Cyrus Jones, I can't think of another guy where everybody kind of knew that the Patriots were going to draft the guy before it happened. Yeah. And usually like we kind of think that we know a guy like that and they usually don't do it. And they did it with Berrios, and it was so cliche. It was just so, oh yeah, of course. But I think that what his role is to make this team is that, as you said, that kind of specialty role on third downs where he comes in and he plays in the slot and allows Edelman to kind of move around a little bit more and allows them to move him, Edelman, around. And then he's the Edelman insurance. I don't think that he's going to ever be a guy that is going to completely replace Julian Edelman's production, but I think he's a nice Edelman insurance policy. And then he also can return punts, which I think is a big part of this. I know that, and I think a lot of fans would agree with me, I would love to see them get Edelman off of punt returns, especially during the regular season. Obviously, during the playoffs, he's the best option that they have back there. So if you need a big play in the playoffs, then I totally understand putting Edelman back there, or even a big play late in a big game. You're playing Kansas City, for instance, in December, or you're playing Pittsburgh, or you're playing, you know, one of these teams that if you win, it's really big for standings and that kind of thing.
Right.
That I can understand. If you're up 31-3 against the Bills, I don't need Edelman back there.
Right.
So I think that that's kind of the hope with Berrios, is that he can be kind of that Amendola guy where he's just another option in some of the roles that the Patriots really like to have in the slot. And also in punt returns. I want to talk about quickly, I mean, Maurice Harris, you know, I think Maurice Harris is a guy that might have more of a specific specialized role than we maybe thought when they signed him, because I don't think really there was any expectation of anything when they signed him. They definitely were using him a lot more on gadget plays, things like end arounds and stuff like that in mini camp than I was expecting. He was kind of like a Cordarrelle Patterson light. Like that was kind of how they were using him. But again, it's mini camp. It's super early. And I don't know how much you can take away from that. I think Dontrell Inman's the interesting name here though, because Inman to me is like got an old man's game. Like he's like the guy at the Y, right? You know, like he's not going to, in these mini camps, he's not going to be super athletic and like wow you with size and speed and all that kind of stuff. But he just gets it. He's just crafty. Like he just knows how to get open. And I think that that's really going to start to come out more in August than it would in a June mini camp.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got some experience. And like you said, that sort of wily craftiness could come in handy, you know. So
he's not gonna run a 4.3, but he just gets open. I don't know, you
right?
Know?
Well, and that's kind of a Patriots thing too, isn't it? Like just sort of like, you know, he finds the spots in the zone, or you know, just uses his body to sort of get that little sliver of openness. So yeah, I you know, you could see that too. Going back to Harris, you know McDaniels loves those gadget guys.
You know, I love the jet sweeps. We can't get rid of the jet sweeps.
So that would be a pretty interesting thing. But sort of any one of these guys, you don't necessarily need them to be all things for all people, right? You just need with these guys, you're talking fourth and fifth guys. You're talking about somebody who can do one or two things really well.
Yeah.
I think it'll sort of come down to that. If anybody pops in the preseason, if anybody, shows that little something that they could use in a game that they might not have otherwise, I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, and you can certainly use – I mean, I don't think you want to use Edelman too much on sweeps just because you don't want to take him out of the route combination too often.
Right.
But you can definitely use Philip Dorsett. I mean, he's a guy that did it last year, and he's obviously really fast. So you can get those. But it's not even so much – I wonder if – I'm sure the analytics crowd has done research on this of – does it really even matter who's running the fake jet sweep? It's honestly, it's like play action in the running back in the backfield. Like, it's just the threat of it, right?
Yeah.
It's just the motion of it and the threat of it. And it usually, for the most part, displaces one defender, in some shape or fashion, whether it's a linebacker or a player in man coverage on that guy, or it just kind of creates a little bit of chaos.
Right.
And I think that's that little element of chaos and the fact that they might hand it off to the guy two or three times in the game, it's enough of a threat for it to kind of scare defenses and cause defenses to react to it. And guys like McDaniels and Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, I know, does it a little bit too. But McVay and McDaniels, I think, are two of the guys that do it the most. It just displaces that defender the same way that play action does it, and it just moves a guy out of a zone or it moves a guy out of the coverage and it opens up a hole in the coverage for a guy, another receiver to run into it. And it really was just super effective for the Patriots last year. And it wasn't so much the fact that, Patterson was dangerous on them too when they handed him the ball, but it was mainly what it did to the passing game and the openings that it presented for the passing game. And it's also just, schematically, it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a really smart and savvy way of doing things. And a lot of teams are just, doing it more and more. Things like jet sweeps and end around and orbit motions and play action, the league is just going to do it more. The numbers really suggest that on first and second down, you should run play action on first or second down almost every single time on one of those downs. Yeah. And really, those are considered run first downs. Those are running downs. You run play action on a rundown like first or second down, teams are averaging like 10, 11 yards per attempt.
Yeah.
And defenses are really struggling to figure out a way to defend those. And I think that, the league is trending in the direction where you're going to see play action ran 40, 50% of the time, I think, very shortly. Especially now that the league has a lot of mobile quarterbacks that are coming in too, that are adding kind of read option threats, and adding a running threat with the quarterback position itself. So it's the analytics crowd tells you that you should run play action almost every time because just what it does to the defense just opens up so much more in the passing game than a traditional drop back. Now, I think that there is obviously an oversaturation effect, right? Like you don't want to do it too often.
Right.
Because then it's kind of all could go, to the wayside if there's no threat of you ever running the ball or if, defenses, I'm sure there's going to be some sort of innovation in the next 3 to 5 years where defenses figure out a way to both stop the run and stop play action. No one's really been able to figure it out yet, but you got to think that that's what defensive coordinators are up at night trying to figure out ways to do.
Right.
So we'll see what happens with that. The last point that we wanted to touch on here, we've mentioned them a bunch of times already, but Gordon and Demaryius Thomas, I think my question with them is just, do you think, like, what are the odds that we see either in any capacity in a Patriots uniform, in a meaningful game or even in a regular season game this season? I don't know. I think that both of them are very much below 50% in that regard.
Yeah, I'd say below 50%. But it's nice to sort of have the option, right? It's nice.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a cherry on top scenario
where,
you know, like you have a pretty solid foundation with the wide receivers. And if you get one of these guys to come back, even if it's for a couple of games, I mean, like, even though Gordon didn't finish his season, like,
he was huge.
He was huge, you know, like in the games that he was playing. So if either one of those guys can be the difference in a winner or a loss during the regular season, even if it's just like three or four, whatever, you take it. So, you know, I don't obviously that, like, you don't want to depend on either one of those guys. You don't want to go into the season thinking, all right, we need one or two of them.
Once a podcast, he's got to make an appearance.
Our, the All 22 mascot.
Yeah, what are you doing? Hey,
he wanted to add his two cents.
He likes Josh Gordon. He's a big fan of him. Yeah. The blind is open, and I'm sure he just saw somebody go by, but we can just ignore him.
Okay. But yeah, like I was saying, I think it's just a matter of you know, maybe getting them for a little bit, maybe getting, you know, Gordon for a few games or Thomas for a few games. You know, if you get them for more, it's, like I said, just a sort of a cherry on top situation.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about Gordon last week, I think it was, and just kind of the numbers that he put up last year in terms of efficiency were pretty ridiculous. I mean, he was by far their most efficient receiver last year when he was playing, and he was putting up just huge gains. I mean, just big play after big play when he was on the field. I think the biggest thing is with him is that everybody around the team wants him on the team. You know, like, Tom Brady wants him there. Julian Edelman wants him there. Everybody is aware in the building. Whether what you think about Josh Gordon in terms of his reliability and stuff like that is one thing, but everybody in the building knows the Patriots are a better offense and the better football team when Josh Gordon is on the team and playing. So I think that that says volumes. You know, I know a lot of people have Josh Gordon takes, and I think that says volumes about his impact on the team last year and really what everybody thought of him. I think with Demaryius Thomas, 2013 Demaryius Thomas is not the guy that you're getting here. You know, he is really not the same guy. I think Josh Gordon is way more in his prime than Demaryius Thomas is. Still more explosive, still a big play threat. Demaryius Thomas, I don't think, is that guy, but he is a professional receiver. You know, you watch him play last year, and he knows how to run routes, and he knows how to do the little details and the little nuances. I think his drops have kind of leveled out. I know that that was a bigger problem for him when he was getting a lot more targets when he was, you know, in his Pro Bowl years with Denver. You know, he's just the type of guy that I think can consistently do his job out there, but he's not going to be a big time difference maker, even if he does come back.
Right.
So he actually is really interesting too, because his Achilles tear was late last year. It was in December. A lot of players, you know, don't come back at all the next year if you get an Achilles, you know, tear that late in the season. So I think that's a big, you know, kind of conversation is for all of these guys is when do those guys get on the field? I think for Thomas, Gordon, I think that whenever he comes back, they're going to take him. You know, I think whenever he can get himself back, they're going to take him on the team. Thomas, I think, is the type of guy that needs to get on the field ASAP. Because if he doesn't get on the field soon, you know, he could be the next, you know, Joey Galloway or Reggie Wayne or whichever veteran, you know, receiver that was over the hill that you want to use as kind of an example.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. You're not getting the 2013 version. Like, when you hear the name Demaryius Thomas, it's sort of exciting and everything like that. But I think with both of these guys, you just sort of temper expectations. And, you know, if you're able to get Gordon back and playing at his best, that's such a huge boost, because, you know, he's still a good player. But you know what you'd get out of Thomas, who knows? And like you mentioned with the injury, it's it's it casts a lot of doubt on what he could actually do, but you never know.
Yeah, well, I think we did a pretty good job there. That covers all of it. We got Theo barking in the background, and he will not be quiet. I've tried multiple times. But do you have anything you want to tease or, anything?
For Mass Varsity, there's been two commitments by wide receivers on the same St. John's of Shrewsbury team, one to Michigan and another to Notre Dame. Which you don't see very often, two major Division I wide receivers on the same high school team in Massachusetts. So it's going to be interesting to see. And then, it looked like the AAC just announced that they're not going to replace UConn's spot with another football program. So that sort of goes out the window for UMass, which was, a lot of people were talking about once UConn left that maybe you'd see UMass sort of slide into that spot. But it appears now, at least reportedly, that the AAC is not going to add another football spot. But, and then going back to those two guys, the one going to Michigan and the one going to Notre Dame, It sort of goes back to, for a place like BC, not being able to keep certain in-state kids at home. But at the same time, BC, I think, has three or four wide receiver commitments already. So, how much does that actually hurt? But still, you'd love, if you're BC, to keep those kids at home.
Yeah, I mean – So UConn is going to the Big East, correct?
Right.
So they're going to Big East for football also.
Well, there is no Big East
football. Okay, right. See, I'm so bad with the college conference.
Yeah.
It's like they're too many.
Yeah, I know. It changes every year. But I think that UConn right now is probably going to be independent for football.
Oh, wow.
So, but they're in Big East for basketball. I mean, UConn's a basketball school, you know. So,
Both sides, women's and men's.
Yeah, exactly. And so we'll see if their men's get better again. But it's an interesting stuff. It's an interesting thing. UMass has been an independent for a little bit now as a football program. And, they'd obviously like to just make it easier and make their schedule so much more it make their schedule so much easier to sort of put together every year if they could be in a conference. So it's too bad that this AAC thing won't work out.
Yeah, UConn, we're going to get a UConn guy here on the Celtics. You got Kemba.
Yeah, oh, God.
Give me Kemba.
Yeah, I think I like Kemba. I always like UConn guards in the NBA. I always think like a UConn guard is like the best form of point guard. But that's it. I mean, I kind of don't really have high expectations for the Celtics. My only thing for the Celtics is to feel good about rooting for them. I didn't like have fun rooting for this year's team at all. No. So like, I just want to have a fun team to root for. I don't think Kawhi might stay in Toronto. If he stays in Toronto, like there's no way they're, I wouldn't say no way, but yeah. I don't think there's I don't think they're the favorites in the East like people thought. Even like with Giannis, I mean they crushed them in the playoffs. So I just want to see a team that's fun to watch, it's fun to get behind, like those Isaiah Thomas teams that were sort of underdogs, but were still sort of exhilarating to watch because they played so hard. I just want to see a team that gets along, plays hard, and is fun to watch. And I don't think we had that this year.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes Kemba such a great fit, because he's a guy that he's like a lunch pail guy. He's going to come out and he's going to play his butt off every single game. He's not going to, coast and take games off like Kyrie Irving did.
Yeah.
He's going to come in here and he's going to play his tail off every single game. And that's just the kind of – he's a pit bull. He's a warrior. He's the type of guy that the Celtics really, really have kind of always been, and they've never been the Kyrie Irving type team.
No,
it showed
this year.
Like Pierce, at times is a little bit of a prima donna for sure, but when it got down to it, Pierce was a tough SOB. You know, yeah. Like he was the type of guy that really, you know, did obviously, you know, and then when KG got here, KG was as tough as nails. You know, he's as tough as they come. And Larry Bird and all those guys were always hustlers and hard nosed players and all out effort all the time. So that's the Celtic way. So I think that that's good news with Kemba. And you know, I think that also if you put together a team, and I know that they're talking about trading for Clint Capella also, if you put together a team that's Kemba, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Clint Capella, I mean, in the East, it's probably the third best team, the fourth best team, but you never actually know. You know, there was always injuries. There's always teams that take a step back. The Sixers, it sounds like they're going to lose Jimmy Butler, so they're really only going to have Embiid and Simmons. Like, I think that it's not that far off. You know, they add those two guys and are able to keep, you know, Tatum and some of the other young guys that they have on the team too. So
yeah, and I think if you factor in Gordon Hayward's improvement, he's going to be a lot better than he was this year coming off that injury. So,
you know, if Gordon Hayward was a top 15, 20 player the year before his injury in Utah, if he's a top 30 player, then you have Kemba, who's an all NBA player last year. Yeah. You have two top 30 guys, and you hope that Jason Tatum eventually is going to be, you know, one of those guys too. So I know that we're taking a very optimistic view on it, but I think whenever you bring in a max contract, if they do actually sign Kemba, it just changes a lot. You know, it changes a lot of the kind of the outlook of the team, and it changes a lot of the perception too of this. Nobody wants to play for the Celtics, which is kind of what it is right now.
Yeah,
if you can get a guy to, you know, sign again, that'd be three summers in a row with, you know, Horford, Hayward, and Kemba that they've gotten a big ticket free agent to sign her. Maybe Horford was a couple of summers before Hayward, I don't remember, but the point is that they're that stigma of Celtics not being able to land big free agents is certainly starting to change if they also land Kemba. All right, well, that's been your Celtics minute here at Patriots, Tony. My dad's a season ticket holder, so I go to a ton of games, and last year he always says this, and I always can, you know, talk him off the ledge, but last year he was really close to selling the tickets because of how annoying the team was. And I'm always like, you can't sell the tickets because we're never going to get them back if you sell them, and you know, that does have to stay in the family, but
because, you know, as soon as you sell the tickets, that's the year that they win.
Well, we kept the tickets all throughout the bad Pierce years, you know, like the in between, you know, Antoine Walker and KG, when they were the worst team in the league, we kept the tickets. And then now, because the team is just, you know, underachieving and he hated Kyrie, he wanted to get rid of him. But on CLNSmedia.com, we talk Patriots now again. we're not changing professions, just yet, at least. I'm doing my top 10 most important Patriots list. We're breaking them out, and I'm kind of breaking down each player by player instead of just dropping the full list. We're taping this on Thursday. I'm on number 7 right now, which is Patrick Chung. So far, we've had Kyle Van Noy. We've had Lawrence Guy. We've had Dante Hightower, and today was Chung. I think the top 5, there are a few surprises. There's a running back in the top 5. Which is interesting. The Patriots, you know, for the most part, I tried to keep it Brady, obviously. Pass catchers, cornerbacks, pass rushers, pass protectors. You know, like guys that you're really like involved heavily in the passing game, because that's just kind of where the league is nowadays.
Yeah.
I think that those are kind of the most important players that you have on your team. So I for the most part, it's in that kind of, you know, perspective. But so check that out on the website. Also check out Alex Barr's interview with the director of Julian Edelman's docuseries that's coming up on Showtime, is it? I think it is. He sat down with him, and there's some cool things to say about kind of the making of that, and also just about Edelman and his experiences with Edelman. So check that out as well. And like I said at the beginning of the show, we're less than a month away. from being able to talk about real football again. So stick it here on Pat's All 22. We'll continue with our position preview next week. Maybe we'll do tight ends to keep it with the pass catchers. We got tight ends and offensive line left for the offensive side of the ball. So we'll stay with, I think, tight ends. Maybe we'll get a whole show out of that. Maybe we'll combine them with the offensive line. They're not really a lot of to talk about in terms of excitement at the tight end position.
Definitely not.
But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, for Theo, who's in the back somewhere. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.